Welcome to the Open Book Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Socks, a Catholic book blogger, and this is episode one. Today's episode is a publisher spotlight. Today I'm pleased to welcome Katie Moore, publicist for Image Catholic Books. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, Pete. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Pleasure to have you with us today. Briefly to start off, just a little history. As some of you listeners may or may not know, I am the Catholic book blogger who started my blog in November 2 years ago. So we just celebrated the 2 year anniversary there of the blog. And the first 4 books I reviewed were books published by Image Books. So the blog started with Image, and now my first podcast will start with Image. So that's a little tidbit of information for everybody. So one thing I want to talk about with listeners is as I embark on this new venture, the first couple episodes are going to be rough. So please bear with me. What I'm working on right now is content and the polish and shine of background music and other bells and whistles will come as they come. But what I hope to do is provide everybody with a good quality podcast that they can get good information on what books to read, which is part of what my blog's mission is. So without further ado, we're going to talk with some books with Katie here. And the first one we're going to talk about is The American Catholic Almanac. So, Katie.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Pete. The American Catholic Almanac is a daily reader of patriots, saints, rogues, and ordinary people who changed the United States. This book comes to us from the folks at Catholic Vote, which, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, is a nonprofit political advocacy group based in Chicago. Yep. And the authors of this book are Brian Birch and Emily Stimson. Brian is the president of Catholic Vote, and Emily is a Catholic writer. She's the author of the Catholic Girls Survival Guide for the Single Years and These Beautiful Bones in Everyday Theology of the Body. Now, with the American Catholic Almanac, Brian Birch and Emily Stimson have put together a page-a-day history of 365 inspiring stories celebrating the historic contributions of American men and women who have been shaped by their Catholic faith. And I think it's important to note, just kind of right off the bat, that, you know, when a lot of people hear the word almanac, they think, okay, a collection of facts and figures, you know, this isn't going to be very exciting. But the American Catholic Almanac is really a collection of stories. And these are fascinating stories about men and women who have made significant contributions to the Catholic Church in America.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I want to point out is you mentioned it's about men and women, but it's also places. Back when we did the blog tour, I chose the Conewaga Chapel as my subject to write about, mainly because it's right down, like 8 minutes down the road from me, and my spiritual director is the pastor there, and that was a very, very good story. So it's not a dry read, as some people may be afraid an almanac would be. It's a very lively read. The stories are written personal that they interest you and captivate you, I found.
Yeah. And Pete, like you said, it's just it's a very good representation of American history, particularly American Catholic history. But in terms of the different places and regions, geographically, like every part of the United States is going to be covered in this book. And also, you know, it covers a really wide span of history. So you're going to have stories that take place during the American Civil War. And then, you know, you're going to have modern entries that focus on Notre Dame football. And, you know, it really covers the gamut.
Right. Yeah. And then that's what made it very interesting for me is you have 365 entries in this book that by the end of it, you're going to learn a lot about your American Catholic history that you probably didn't know before that.
Yeah. That's really the best part. I mean, I'm still amazed when I flip it open and just, you know, land on a random page that usually it's a story that I'm not familiar with. So there's a lot to learn in this book.
How long did it take to develop the book itself? I mean, from conception to finished product, just curious.
Goodness. You know, that's really a question for the authors. And I don't know for sure exactly how long they took, you know, to work on it. I know it was at least a year and that they they had to do a lot of research. I mean, this is really an in-depth look at American Catholic history. And there were a lot of people kind of working behind the scenes, calling local parishes, you know, to check facts and make sure that they were getting every detail right. So yeah, there was definitely a lot of research and a lot of time and effort that went into it.
Yeah, and very good research, and it made it a good product in the end. So it's one that I highly recommend, that I've reviewed, and I'd recommend it for anybody that wants to know a little bit more about their Catholic faith in the United States.
Yeah, that is a question that we get, you know, like, who is the ideal audience or the target audience for the book? And like you said, it really is a book for anyone. The authors did mention that, you know, it would be great for Catholic families, for schools, but really just anyone who's curious about American history. And I think the family component is really key, because I could see families sitting around the dinner table, you know, in the evenings and reading one of the entries, and just a great way for parents to kind of pass along this important piece of Catholic history with their children. So I think that's kind of a neat idea in terms of how the book could be used.
Right, or even to be used by homeschooling families.
Yeah, definitely.
So, okay. You want to move on to the next title?
Sure, absolutely. So the next one on the list is My Battle Against Hitler, Faith, Truth, and Defiance in the Shadow of the Third Reich. And this is the memoirs and essays of Dietrich von Hildebrand. Many of us know the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was the German Lutheran pastor who stood against Hitler and the Nazis and paid for it with his life. But I think many of us may not be familiar with the name of Dietrich von Hildebrand, who was a German Catholic philosopher who was a vocal opponent of Hitler and Nazism from the onset of the political movement in the early 1920s, and who quickly became the Nazis' public enemy number one in Vienna. This is a really important book, I think. It has such a strong message, and I think it's the story behind it is really interesting. The editor and compiler of this book is John Henry Crosby, and this is a quote from John Henry Crosby. He says, quote, "It's rare today that an important news story full of vivid detail should come to light from the already much documented Nazi period. His story might well have been lost to us were it not for a memoir penned near the end of his life at the request of his wife, Alice von Hildebrand." End quote. So really what we have here is something that Dietrich von Hildebrand put together for Alice von Hildebrand, his second wife, who was actually quite a bit younger than he was and who wasn't there when he was, fighting the Nazis. And she had kind of said that she regretted that she, you know, wasn't a part of that time in his life. And so he wrote this for her. And, it's basically a love letter to Alice. And so I think, just kind of knowing that that's the story behind it is really interesting.
Yeah, I think the fact that it was written in that context makes it a much more personal read than what it may have been otherwise.
Yes, definitely.
And the one thing you commented there about is I definitely was unfamiliar with Dietrich von Hildebrand's role in World War II, and was frankly amazed at how strong-willed he was against Nazism in its very early stages, before Hitler even took the front stage and led that party banner. And he really was that strong about it that he was to the point that he didn't care about his own safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very impressive. Particularly because he just had he was so keen in observing really what was going on. Even when so many people around him, very smart, intellectual, academic people, and, many important Catholics really, were fooled by Hitler early on, very early on. And, Dietrich von Hildebrand, was just so, he never wavered, and he really recognized the evil behind Hitler from the very beginning, before many other people started to recognize that.
Right, and that's the key, before many even started to recognize it, which is why some people of his fellow philosophers kind of shunned him to the wayside because of his viewpoints, because they felt social fascism was going to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had to flee from Germany and really all across Europe in the 1930s before he ended up settling in New York City in 1940 because his life was in danger.
Yes, I can only imagine what that was like. And to still be that strong-willed and still speaking out and still writing so adamantly against it, knowing that you were the number one on the hit list if Hitler or his members of his party found you, that speaks volumes to the man. And actually, Pope Benedict speaks very highly of Dietrich von Hildebrand as well.
Yes, he does.
And the von Hildebrand project itself, which John Henry Crosby is part of.
Yeah, it's the Legacy Project, and it's actually based at Steubenville University in Ohio, or Franciscan University at Steubenville. And their goal really is to, maintain von Hildebrand's legacy and bring it to the world, primarily by making his writings available to everyone, which of course has been, a very a long process of, a lot of his writings were in German, so all the translating and everything that's been involved, but they do such an excellent job, and their work and mission is really so very important.
And that was one of the things John Henry and I discussed when I interviewed him, was some of the future projects of the Dietrich von Hildebrand Legacy Project. And I'll quote from the interview that you can find on my website, which I will have that link in the show notes. My question to John was, could you tell us about the Dietrich von Hildebrand Legacy Project? What is the goal of the Hildebrand Project? And his response was, since this is a blog about books, I'm proud to say that the project aims to bring Hildebrand's entire corpus into print, both in printed and digital formats. Many of Hildebrand's English books are out of print. Here the aim is to bring them back, not just as reprints, but as new editions, complete with new introductions to help contemporary readers engage in his thought. In addition, much of Hildebrand's writing remains untranslated into English from the original German. My Battle Against Hitler is, of course, the most visible fruit of our translation efforts, but we will also be publishing Hildebrand's Aesthetics, a magisterial work in two volumes, in the spring and fall of 2015. A very important work that remains to be translated is, okay, this is in German, so I will give you the English translation. The Metaphysics of Community, first published in 1930, in which Hildebrand worked out the philosophical fundamentals that empowered his writings against Nazism. As our work in publishing has progressed, the project has also evolved. Today we see publishing as just a first step toward the presentation of Hildebrand's ideas through conferences, seminars, scholarship, and grants. We are a publisher in order to be a purveyor of ideas. So they have a pretty ambitious schedule there.
Oh, yeah. But, it's very important. And I think, with someone like Dietrich von Hildebrand, his legacy really is his work and his body of writing. So the best way to really preserve that is by making it available to a wider audience. And that's what they're doing.
Right. And at the time it was published, it was mainly in aimed towards Germans to wake them up to what was going on. So definitely a new setting for other countries to see his writings in English. So I'm interested to see what all comes out from that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, next up on the list, we have a rather interesting title. This is one that I have not read yet, I'm sorry to say, but it is, Would You Baptize an Extraterrestrial?
Okay, this has been a really fun one for me to work on. It's it's quite different from most of the books that we publish. So, the subtitle is actually, it's would you baptize an extraterrestrial and other questions from the astronomer's inbox at the Vatican Observatory. This book is written by Brother Guy Consolmagno and Father Paul Muller, and they work at the Vatican Observatory in Rome, or it's actually just outside of Rome. And in their roles there, you know, they interact with the public on a regular basis, and they really do get questions like this, like, would you baptize an extraterrestrial? They get emails from people all the time. So they decided to write a book and to address six of the questions that they are often asked. And the book goes through these six questions, and it's written in dialogue form, so the two authors go back and forth and kind of share their thoughts on each of the questions. And it's really it's a really interesting book, and I think it's the main idea behind it is, or their goal is, to dispel the assumption that science and faith must be at odds with one another. And in writing this book, they show how science and religion can have different but complementary ways of looking at the same issue. And I think they really accomplish that.
Yeah, it definitely a very interesting title. Now, a question, because I haven't read the book.
Yes.
Did they approach you, or did Image go to them first with this idea?
Oh gosh, you know, I don't know the full backstory there.
I'm
really not positive.
It's an original idea, so, so how that came about? Like, hey, did they just say we're going to write a book, it'd be interesting to know that. But if you don't know, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay, well, thanks, Pete. Yeah, I mean, I know this is not. This is not Brother Guy's first book. He's written several other books. So I don't, you know, the whole idea of writing a book, you know, was not out of the norm for him.
Okay.
But as far as, you know, how they came to us and everything, I don't know the whole backstory there.
Now, you said he's an astronomer at, these are both astronomers at the Vatican?
Brother Guy is an astronomer, and Father Paul works at the Vatican Observatory. And I don't have his exact title here with me, but he's, it's more of a directorial role, that he has. He's not actually an astronomer. He's a physicist and has a PhD in history and philosophy. But he's on the research staff at the Vatican Observatory. And, Brother Guy is an astronomer, and he his specialty there at the Vatican Observatory is meteorites and asteroids, and it's the work that they do is just really fascinating. But lately, like within the past year or so, Brother Guy has been doing a lot of public speaking and traveling all over the world, really. But he's been in the United States for the past several months, going around giving a lot of talks. And he just won the Carl Sagan Medal from the American Astronomical Society, which recognizes and honors outstanding communication by an active planetary scientist. And he's the first clergyman ever to receive this honor. So that was really, yeah, a very big deal.
And if I'm correct, I think I saw this week you have a link to something with him on your website.
He's been doing a lot of media appearances, especially since he's been here in the United States. It's been a little more convenient than when they're in Rome. But he just recently did an interview with David Gibson, who's the Catholic reporter for Religion News Service. So that article has kind of been showing up in different places across the web and in print newspapers and different publications. So that may have been what you saw.
Yes, I believe it was. Who do you think would be interested in this book? Is it a general book that anybody's going to pick up and enjoy, or is it targeted?
Yeah, you do not have to be a science nerd or, you know, to read this book. It's definitely for the general public. And I think that was really their goal in writing it, to make some of these topics and issues accessible to, you know, people that maybe don't have degrees in science, you know, but it's very easy to understand, very easy to follow. It's actually kind of funny, you know, the way they both have – great, you know, great senses of humor. And so their conversations going back and forth are very light and funny, and they joke around a lot. But just to kind of touch on some of the other questions that they address, you know, it really, would you baptize an extraterrestrial is just a small piece of this book, but they also talk about the Big Bang and Genesis. They talk about what happened recently when astronomers debated the status of Pluto as a planet. And Brother Guy was actually involved in that process and in those conversations. So he really has, you know, inside information in terms of how all that went down. They talk about the Star of Bethlehem, which is perfect for this time of year. And, you know, whether it's just a pious religious story or an actual description of astronomical events. And then, of course, they talk about would you baptize an extraterrestrial, which is always obviously everyone's favorite. But yeah.
Okay. Just to break things up here a little bit, something struck me. Have you listened to The Catholic Next Door by Greg and Jennifer Willits?
I have,
Well, you remember back in the early days of the Rosary Army, and they always used to joke about being in the cloffice, the closet office?
Oh,
guess where I'm at? I'm in a closet.
That's where you are? The closet office?
I am in a closet. It's the quietest place in the room, quietest room in the house full of five children right now. And I see the advantage of being in a closet.
So, yeah, well, I am not in a closet, but I am in our... our intern office, which is not occupied at the moment because we usually just have interns during the summer, and I share my office with someone else, so I figured I should go somewhere where I wouldn't be bothering anyone and I would have some quiet too.
I'll have to extend apologies to Greg and Jennifer for humorously laughing at the references to the cloffice for years, because now I'm next book we have is Joy of the Gospel, and I'm going to ask you an honest question. I've seen this printed in various forms. What makes each book's form so special?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I was planning to talk about that regardless of whether or not you asked me. I'm being completely truthful here when I say that I think that our edition of the Joy of the Gospel really is special. And a little different than most of the other editions that are out there. So first of all, it's a hardcover. And typically hardcovers are more expensive, but we tried really hard to bring this down to a lower price point so that it would be easier for people to afford. So it's only $14, which for a hardcover is really
That's
reasonable. And it starts at 14. I'm sure, you know, you'll see it discounted at various places. Mm-hmm. But the starting price is $14. Because it's a hardcover, I think it just makes – it's really a gift book. You know, it's a beautiful keepsake that you're going to want to read and come back to and have for a long time. So I think having the hardcover makes it nice because it'll hold up over time. And then the other thing that makes ours unique is the added content that we have from Father Robert Barron and Father James Martin. We have a foreword from Father Barron and an afterword from Father Martin. And their words really provide the perfect framing and context for Pope Francis's message. And that added content really makes this a special edition of the Joy of the Gospel.
Yes, and you have the content of the book itself, which is a fascinating read. It was released relatively early on in the pontificate of Pope Francis and basically set forth his vision for what he planned to do. So it's actually, I attended a men's conference last summer at Mount St. Mary's, and Monsignor Stuart Swetland was our retreat director that weekend, and the Joy of the Gospel was the encompassing theme of that retreat and one of the actual talks. And you know, we can get in a little conversation here about Pope Francis. It seems that you have two sides right now arguing over Pope Francis. It's pretty cut and dry, I think. But I think if you step back and you don't let the media influence your opinion of what he's doing, he's really no different than anybody else before him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's funny, you know, watching the media coverage, because there has been so much interest in Pope Francis. And so he's been widely covered by outlets that would not, you know, normally not take an interest in the Catholic Church or in the Pope. And the things that, you know, some of the things that they're saying that are just like groundbreaking and, you know, like have things that have never been done before. And you look and it's things that have been, I mean, it's basically the same things that have been done for years and years. And there really hasn't been that much change from Pope Benedict to Pope Francis. And yeah, it's just really interesting to see the way that he's been perceived by the public and by the media, especially.
Yeah, and actually that's one of the conversation points my spiritual director and I have often is you talk about what the media did and our response is always, Pope Benedict did that.
So. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
But I do think in terms of like an introduction to Pope Francis and in his own words, you know, this is just perfect for seeing, you know, his personality comes through in his writing, I think. You know, there's so many great quotes. I love, there's one thing that he says that I just think is so funny, but it's so true. He says, an evangelizer must never look like someone who has come back from a funeral.
Yes.
And I just think that's so great. Yes. You know, if we can't be excited about our faith, how can we expect other people to, you know, take an interest? So, you know, he just has such great recommendations in terms of the new evangelization and ways that we can spread the faith.
Yes, he sure does. So let's move on to Joy to the World by Dr. Scott Hahn. A little bit of things I have to say about this.
Okay.
I am a big Scott Hahn fan. I'll admit that right off the bat. And this summer I had the pleasure of setting up a day-long conference at our parish here in New Oxford. And Scott came to town and it was absolutely tremendous. And the amazing thing to me is, well, not amazing, but the interesting thing was that for as big as Scott Hahn has become in the Catholic publishing world, speaking world, you can sit down and have a one-on-one conversation with Scott, and he acts like he's known you forever.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very interesting to me. And I've interviewed him a few times and featured a couple of his books, and I'm finishing up my review of Joy to the World right now, and let's talk a little bit about the book.
Okay, sure. Okay, well, the full title is Joy to the World, How Christ's Coming Changed the World and Still Does. So, you know, as the title implies, this is a story or a book about Christmas. It's really a book about the Holy Family and the joy of Christmas. And it's the first time that Dr. Hahn has really written a book that focuses entirely on the Christmas story. And I think, you know, he does such a great job, and he draws on his extensive knowledge of Scripture and the early church, and he breaks down the Christmas story in a way that I've never seen it, you know, done before. And he gives you all the background, the historical context that you need to really understand the meaning and significance of every element of the story, from the angels to the magi and the shepherds and the important roles that they play. And, you know, it would be great Advent reading in preparation for Christmas.
Yeah.
But there's definitely so much to learn from this book.
Yeah.
But it's accessible as well. It's easy to read. And it's fun. And Dr. Hahn shares, you know, some personal stories too, which I always enjoy. You know, I think that's a nice touch, and it's nice to hear stories, you know, about his family and everything. So
funny you should bring that up, because that's one of the questions I had in my interview with him. So this will be posted on the blog in about 2 weeks. And the question I had for Scott was this: an observation on my part, your writing style has seemed to change over the years. In recent books, you tend to include more reflections as related to family experiences. One such instance is the first chapter of Joy to the World, when you talk about your daughter Hannah with the babies in the Bethlehem orphanage. Has this occurred intentionally or just a natural flow from life's experiences? And Scott's reply was this. Well, as you grow in marriage and parenting, you have more to talk about and more experiences to draw from. I wrote my first book almost 20 years ago. I've seen a lot of parenting and grandparenting since then. I suppose, too, that the older we get, the more we see our own lives as part of time's ever-rolling stream, part of the biblical drama that's still playing itself out in all of our lives. That realization is hard to suppress in my non-academic writing. Besides, my understanding of sacred scripture has always been shaped by the central biblical notion of the covenant as family, which is never reducible to academic theory. Covenant theology doesn't just make better sense out of scripture, but of everyday life as well. In a similar way, I find in my experiences as a father of six, and now a grandfather of 11, also shed a lot of light on what God himself does in fathering his family. So I thought that was a rather, a very good response, actually. I mean, you go back into Scott Hahn's early, early writing, and once you get past Rome Sweet Home, it's really a lot of heavy, not heavy, but it's a lot of theological writing.
A lot of theology.
Yeah, it's a lot of theology there, and I see a marked difference in it, in his writing, and I believe that, in fact, helps him, because, as an author, because it draws people in to a more personal story. He's interwoven the story of Christmas, and he kicked the book off with a trip to Bethlehem, where his daughter Hannah at the time was it six?
I think she was a little older. I think she was probably like 13 or 14.
13. Okay. Yeah. 13 or 14. And they went over to an orphanage in the town of Bethlehem, and she immediately lit up. You're right. He was 12 because she was a pre-teenager. Okay. He hits on the teenager thing in the book. And she immediately lit up when they went in that orphanage. And he interweaves that in with the beginning of the Christmas story, how he starts the book. And to me, that just makes the book, it's just going to draw a lot more readers in.
And oh, yeah.
It's definitely a positive for his writing style. Not that his academic stuff is any less interesting, if you like that kind of read, which I do. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people get lost in academic books. So he's kind of turned his writing style into a way that actually feeds into the new evangelization, I think, by drawing more people in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's perfect for this subject matter in particular with the Christmas story, because it is all about family. So, you know, if there were ever a time for him to share some personal stories about his own family, you know, this is it. This is the perfect book for him to do that. And it all works really well, and I think a lot of what he was he sets the tone with that initial story about Hannah and their trip to Bethlehem and their experience there, because he talks about really seeing Christmas through the eyes of a child and the wonder, you know, that children kind of, that sense of wonder that they have about Christmas when they're young, and sometimes we lose that as we grow older, but we shouldn't, because the story itself is not losing any of its power, or, you know, the amazing components are all still there. We're just you know, we get into our routines, and it sort of loses its wonder over time. But I think this book is a great tool in terms of kind of relooking at the Christmas story with new eyes, or in a new light. And Dr. Hahn is just the perfect guide for taking us on that journey.
Yes, and he's revitalized the story in a way that a secular world today that gets wrapped up in the secular version of Christmas really should read, so that they are reacquainted with what the real meaning of Christmas is about. Because it's all in this book. And you know, I want to word it this way in my review, that he has incorporated the entire cast of characters into this book, from the good to the bad to the ugly. Herod's in there, Mary, Joseph, the angels, the shepherds, the people, places, and things of the entire story. And he puts it in this book and presents it in a way that it's an easy read, but but it's a very informative read on the entire story to reacquaint the reader with what Christmas is all about.
Yes, yes.
So, any other books you want to share? Any upcoming releases you'd like to share with us, just briefly?
Sure, yeah. After the first of the year, in January, we'll have a new book from John Michael Talbot and Mike Aquilina called The Ancient Path. And it's a little bit of a memoir. It's John Michael Talbot kind of telling his story and the important role that the church fathers have played in that and how significant they've been in his faith life and his journey over the years. So that's going to be a really, really good. And then in February, we have a really wonderful biography of Richard John Newhouse by Randy Boyagoda. And it's so in-depth. It's so good. I'm just really excited to see what people think about it once they start reading it. But, you know, it's one that I've really enjoyed reading and working on. Yeah.
Now, I have a question. Publicist.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Yes.
What is that role in a publishing house? Publishing company.
Okay. Sure. Well, my job really is to get the word out about our books. So I work very closely with our authors, and I schedule media appearances for them. I do a lot of book mailings. I send books out to reviewers. But the goal is really, to garner exposure for the books, to get the books reviewed in magazines, newspapers, on blogs, to get the authors on TV shows and radio interviews and things like that. So every day is different. Every book is different. Every project is different. But it's a really fun job. And I enjoy it.
Great. And in closing here, as we wrap up the show, I just want to thank you, Katie. And I have worked together since day one of the Catholic Book Blogger. And like I said, Image Books was the first book publisher that I worked with. You've been great to work with. You're there with all the giveaways. You hook me up with authors. So it's been a wonderful experience working with you, Katie.
Oh, well, I always enjoy working with you, Pete.
So, okay.
You've been such a great supporter of our work and our books, and yeah. We appreciate that.
Good books deserve good support, so.
Well, thank you.
All right. So in closing, thanks, everyone, for joining us today, and thank you, Katie, for coming on the show. In the show notes, I will have the link to Image Books. It is a website link, Katie.
It's www.imagecatholicbooks.com.
Okay. All right. And you can also check the show notes out to this episode, where I'll have links to each of the books that we discussed today, and links to my reviews and author interviews to the ones that are available. If you haven't visited my blog yet, it is www.catholicbookblogger.com, where every week there is another review, usually a giveaway, and an author interview with that author if available. And, of course, there'll be more podcasts. So, in closing, until next time, open up a book, and God bless. Okay, done recording.
All right.
That was awesome.
Good.